Nice to have you with us today, Dr. Stein.
It's great to be with you, Gary. I'm so pumped by hearing your introduction.
Dr. Stein, I would like to take your entire medical establishment and just do a smackdown on them, but I'm not going to because I'm going to be polite today. But I consider the day of the hubris and the conceit that there's only one way to approach disease prevention and treatment as an unshakable true belief that the pharmaceutical approach, the medical industrial approach, is the only approach. I believe that more Americans are realizing that we have been misled and that we better look at more honest, natural approaches. With that, please take us through what you consider what we must start to refocus on at the national level, the local level, individual levels, the political levels, as how we can prevent disease in ourselves, our seniors, and our children.
Great. Well, thank you. This is a lot of what drove me out of the practice of medicine, which I did for about 25 years, and into what I consider political medicine, because as you've certainly implied, and I believe you've said this many times, that in order to fix our health, we really need to fix our healthcare system. And what I learned as a physician advocate, that we can't fix our healthcare system till we fix our political system, because they are all so corrupted by this very corrupt political process where money rules the day. So you've got Monsanto in the White House, basically, you know, in ensuring that we have an unhealthy food system and an unhealthy food supply. When people are eating a really nutrition poor, an empty nutrition diet, and are living in, shall we say, cities and towns that are designed around the automobile and passive transportation, there's very little that can be done to actually create a healthy society. And if I can give you one example in a nutshell, actually, let me give you two quick factoids. One is that, underscoring what you've said, 75% of every healthcare dollar being spent by government, whether it's local, state, or federal, it's commonly known that about 75% of healthcare dollars are spent on chronic diseases that are preventable if only we were doing the right things to create healthy communities. That means both healthy food system, clean air, clean water, et cetera, and also an active transportation system. And to give you an example of how powerful that is. It can be called prevention. I like to call it just an infrastructure for health, because that's what we're supposed to be, a healthcare system, not a disease care system, which is what we're getting now at incredible cost, not only to our pocketbooks, but also to our health, because we're creating these chronic endemic problems that cannot be fixed. You can throw a lot of expensive pharmaceuticals at them and medical procedures, but at best, you enable people to tread water or to live with chronic disease. You're not really providing a cure when you have a sick environment or a sick community. And I would add to that a sick economy. They really go hand in hand. So here's an example that just makes it so clear. In the early 1990s, Cuba, and forget about their political system or even their health care system for a moment. Their health care system is extremely good and puts most Western health care systems, including ours, to shame. But let's forget about their health care system for the moment. What happened in 1990 was that their oil pipeline went down, and suddenly they had to transition overnight to an organic and sustainable local food system. They basically had to put people to work and their draft animals to work. They didn't have the chemicals to throw onto their fields. They didn't have pesticides. They didn't have fertilizers because all of those are oil-derived. And they also didn't have the fuel to drive the tractors. So poof, overnight, they had to go organic. And poof, overnight, they also had to start walking and biking for the most part and a little bit of public transportation. Do you know what happened to their health statistics practically overnight? And remember, their economy is crashing, so it's a very high-stress time psychosocially and economically, so you'd think health would be suffering on that account. But actually what happened was because their food and transportation systems got healthy overnight, their death rate from diabetes crashed by 50%. It went down 50% over the course of 2 or 3 years. Their death rate from heart disease went down about 35%, from stroke nearly as much, and all-cause mortality went down about 20%. This is practically with a snap of a finger, because suddenly people were eating a healthy diet and were active in order to get where they needed to go. And it just, you know, to my mind, it clarifies so much why policy upstream is really important and why our system.
I appreciate that answer. Thank you for that. As someone who has spent my entire career trying to understand the nature of disease, I find it's relatively simple. I remember arguing at the time when they wanted all women to start increasing mammograms, there was some very strong concerns that the number of cancers caused by women getting annual mammograms would actually exceed those that would be able to be helped by finding early detection of tumors from the mammograms, and that there also was another area of science with thermography that would show heat differentiation in the breast tissue that could be a good indicator, and then do additional studies, but it would not be the initial invasive radiation. And there was a Dr. Epstein, Samuel Epstein, MD, PhD, University of Illinois, in environmental medicine, who was leading that charge. I just spoke to him yesterday, in fact. And he's still leading that charge. And yesterday he said, isn't it amazing, after 40 years of trying to get this message out, that by changing your diet, by getting rid of the high inflammatory foods and beverages like coffee and fried foods and pizzas, the acrylamides, the heterocyclic amines, you could substantially improve a chance of not getting breast cancer. Then if you did something a little extraordinary for the average person, if you started to understand there are certain phytonutrients and antioxidant-rich foods that can prevent breast cancer and even alter the biochemistry of natural anti-tumor activity in the body, or killer cell activity, and vitamin C does that. And he said, but that message after 40 years is still not common. And he said, Gary, he said, I'm so frustrated. He said, I've spent 40 years of my life looking at good science, sharing this, all from testifying before Congress, and he said, and yet I feel as if I have failed. And I said, you haven't failed at all. I said, think of the Native American. When they make a choice, they plan it for the next seven generations. I said, in the United States, we don't think a month ahead, let alone a day ahead. We're thinking in this moment, what is my political choice? What is my economic choice? I said, so when people go to look at information, if you're asking them to make a lifestyle change, more often than not, they won't, unless they're already incapacitated and have no choice. Where the doctor said, if you don't change, you die. And then and only begrudgingly will frequently people make changes. I've seen people keep smoking, including my own brother, right up till he died. So, and not a member of my family. I have a humongous family on my mother and father's side. Although I have 20 aunts and uncles and brothers. I said, I couldn't get one of them to make a healthy choice in their life. Think about the frustration of that. And then watching them die in 50s and 60s of diseases were completely preventable. But they didn't want to accept that. So I said to him, there are people today, there are women today who are alive, Dr. Epstein, because of you. There are women who are part of the feminist movement who became advocates of educating women from a more holistic perspective, a more natural perspective. There are people who've taken your work that maybe they didn't credit you or not, but you may never know the truth that you put out there that others are saying, no, I'm not going to drink a cola. I'm not going to have alcohol in any amount because it kills cells and creates inflammatory cytokines. Instead, they're doing the right thing. I said, now, you don't know about the good that you've done. You're just frustrated that it hasn't been a paradigm changer. So my question to you is this. Having come as a physician, as a magna cum laude, top of the class, Harvard, doctored also from Harvard Medical School, and a specialist in internal medicine, having seen the frustration, the few triumphs and the many problems of not seeing the paradigm you are part of change, to be open, to be self-correcting, to be self-critical, instead to continue going forward with its failed war on cancer, war on AIDS, war on, just like our war on drugs, war on poverty. I'm sure that you wouldn't advocate a continuation of the incarceration of nonviolent crimes. I'm assuming that. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. You'll tell us yes or no in a moment. But if you're running as a Green Candy Party, I know that they're more humanistic and they're more spiritual in their approach. You're looking to put people into a healthy state physically, in a healthier state mentally, in a healthier state spiritually. Tell us about the turning point in your career where you decided that you would take a step out and away from the traditional approach to medicine and the traditional approach to healing. What caused that? Where are you at now? If you were to sit with a woman today, or a man today, or a child today, and you wanted to prevent that child from having diabetes and obesity and heart disease and arthritis by the time they're 10, and if you want to prevent a woman from developing the cancers and the obesity and the other problems that many face, what would be the advice you would give, not just as an individual, a woman who is concerned about women and all people, but also as a person that paid your dues within the Orthodox medical community? Tell us that story.
Great. Wonderful story. I could be on all day talking about this. Let me just answer a couple of the questions, the smaller questions first, just to be sure I don't let them fall through the cracks. Yes, of course, I completely agree that the problem of drug dependency and chemical dependency needs to be treated as a public health problem, not as a crime. Of course, you know, it is completely ineffective, counterproductive, simply to be throwing people into jails where they become further corrupted and then, you know, essentially economically incapacitated, because once you come out with a Corey record, you know, you can't get a job. So, of course, then, you know, it pushes people further into an underground drug economy, which then often forces them into the world of violence, either as perpetrators or victims. So, yes, definitely. I mean, that needs to be brought back on track. And, you know, I think it illustrates the issue of how we could be doing chemical and drug issues better. And we would start, of course, by legalizing marijuana right away, because it's a drug which is dangerous because it is illegal. It is not illegal because it is dangerous. But what that illustrates is that it would empty out our jails, where we're spending anywhere from $25,000 to $40,000 per year to warehouse people and basically to educate them in criminal culture and create a cycle of recidivism. So by doing the right thing ethically and in terms of health, by treating drug dependence the way it should be treated, we also benefit enormously economically. So it's an illustration of how when you do the right thing for people's health, you're also really doing the right thing for our economy and for our communities. And in the long run, those three things really align. And let me give one more small example, and then I'll get to the bigger personal story. If you look at a place like Copenhagen, several decades ago, they looked ahead, as you mentioned, thinking generationally, they looked ahead and they saw that, it's probably a good idea to build some bike paths. So they did. And now about 40% of people bike to Copenhagen, to work in Copenhagen, to work and to school. 40%. I mean, that is staggering. It's pretty hard to do it in our modern urban America. A lot of people try. You unfortunately take your life in your hands for many people when you do that. But it's absolutely outrageous that we don't align incentives for our economy and for people's health. Because if we provided that infrastructure for health, those bike paths, the full accounting of the cost of gasoline, which, of course, needs to come with offsets because it's otherwise regressive, and we always have to bear that in mind in changing the pricing of things. But nonetheless, we could be changing the incentives so that the economy, the environment, and our health align. So that now, if you wanted to eat right in the inner cities of America, it's very hard to do that because there are food deserts. Thankfully, there is a movement in inner city America, particularly in the communities of color, to establish food justice and food independence and food security. And in doing so, it not only creates a food economy and creates local and secure jobs, but it also greatly enhances people's health. So we're often told, the party line here is that people don't want to do the right thing. But the fact of the matter is, we are, so much money is spent to miseducate us and diseducate us from the moment we are born to do the wrong thing and to desire the wrong thing and to get into the wrong habits that, we sort of forget about that. And we take that party line for granted and we think, oh, yeah, it sure is hard to change public opinion. Well, that's because all of the creators, all the drivers of public opinion are owned by the predators, the food predators and the chemical predators, and the polluters and the oil industry and so on. They're the ones who are pushing, for this constant message. Let me give one other quick example and then I'll jump to the personal story. Greece used to have an exemplary set of public health statistics. Really low rates of cancer, low rates of heart disease, longevity, all of that. That began to change in a big way in the last two decades or so. So what happened? What happened was that the food industry got in there and they started advertising to children. You've got to miseducate people starting early because if they develop good, healthy habits, they tend to like them and keep them. Making exactly that point that this is not an act of nature that we just want to do the wrong thing. We are miseducated from the moment go to do the wrong thing. And that's what happened in Greece when the fast food industry got in there and when supermarkets got in there. It undermined the local food industry. Advertising was targeted at children, and suddenly, boom, overnight, you had kids who were getting chronic diseases. Not so much the adults, it was kids because it was their food habits that were changing. So all of this, I'd say it makes a, when did I change? And let me make this part quick because I've talked too long here. But after I had been in medicine practicing for about 5 or 10 years, I became really aware that I was seeing all these diseases that did not exist when I was growing up. And I was working at the time largely with young adults, with a college age population. And, suddenly, and that and just looking at the health statistics too, everybody's got asthma, especially kids. Boom, this epidemic of asthma, an epidemic of cancer, especially in kids, and learning disabilities, and then obesity, and diabetes, and high blood pressure, and elevated blood lipids, and all the things that pave the way to a life of chronic disease, starting very early. So I said to myself, what's going on here? You know, our genes don't change overnight. That's not what's happening. And I became involved at that point in looking at, so what are the community determinants of health and disease? And I kind of, you know, discovered that incredible, powerful body of literature that you are referencing as well. I participated with Physicians for Social Responsibility in this research for many years, reviewed just about every printed study available, wrote a book about it called, two of them, in fact. One was Toxic Threats to Child Development, that looked especially at why all of a sudden all these kids have learning disabilities. And then that was followed with a question that began with, why suddenly do we have an epidemic of Alzheimer's disease? And we expanded that from looking just at the brain to really looking at chronic disease across the whole body. And that book or that report is called Environmental Threats to Healthy Aging. These are both available on the web. They can be downloaded for free. But, you know, they basically underscore most of the themes that you've been talking about, that there is not only a very affordable fix here, which is upstream, there's an affordable fix, but it just so happens that that fix for our health is also a godsend for the economic plague that we are under right now. We need to create economies that are founded on local productivity, local labor, local creation, that keep our money recirculating in the community where it's much more powerful rather than being sent to corporate headquarters overseas, that these two things align, that what's good for people is good for the planet, is good for the economy. And it's a wonderful narrative that, you know, in part, that is why I was recruited to run for office. I was fighting as a physician, going to, you know, lobby my legislator thinking that would do it. And I learned the hard way, as so many people do after they go into political advocacy, or I should say issue advocacy, that in order to fix any of the issues that demand change, that are cost effective, that are win-win for our lives, for our planet, and for our jobs, in order to get any of that past first base, we've got to first fix the political system. That, in a nutshell, is what my campaign is about. And before I forget, can I mention just my website where I'd love to send people?
Yes.
And that is basically jillstein.org. You can find out more about it, because it is, you know, it's not only a god darn shame that this is going on, you know, that we're sort of going over the cliff here, but, you know, we can't afford to do this. And, you know, destiny is not going to allow us to do this very much longer. We really need to turn things around.
All right. Now, I appreciate you giving us a more in-depth and uninterrupted 15 minutes. You gave us an answer. Now I'm going to do the following, and I did this with the people who are not getting any media attention, who've been excluded from the official corporate Democrat and the official corporate Republican media and platforms, but who have some very important issues to discuss in ways that are progressive and more inclusive. I'm going to ask you for a rapid response, if you would, please. You don't have to tell us why. Just these are issues, and my audience already knows this because I posted these. These are issues that I came up with to create a new platform that is inclusive of all the people who are left out of the existing one, which is about 245 million Americans. And from this, There's no ideology. It's just fluid ideas that I believe we have to look not just at the existing current immediate vote cycle, but rather look down the road. Otherwise, what we're going to have is Obama's going to be reelected by about 12 per point because the Republicans are so abysmal in everything they present and lack any insight, foresight, foreign policies, health, environmental issues that are at all constructive to a solution. And Obama's going the corporate way, but he's much smoother in how he presents himself, irrespective of the quality of what he presents, which means that he'll finish and then Hillary Clinton be the next president. That many of us are concerned about. What we'd like to see is that we're preparing ourselves for the next cycle. just like the Native Americans. We haven't done that in the past because the official Democrats didn't want that. Hence, they excluded Ralph Nader or anyone else from the Greens or any other party, the Justice Party, the Constitutional Party. And I'm saying, let us join together with the best ideas, leave the ideas that we can argue against off, and here are the ideas I've come up with, and I'm just going to ask you your position on them. You either say yes or no.
Great.
Okay? And we can assume that yes or no means yes, that is something that you as a candidate for the presidential candidate for the Green Party would support, or no, you would not. And there's no need to go into deeper on at this moment. We're just trying to see where you're at, all right?
Great.
Because
we
already know where all the Republicans, except and all the Democrats who are official, stand on these, all right?
Great.
To reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act to stop the corporate renegades of Wall Street from exploiting us.
Oh, my God, yes.
Banning trading in commodities that are central to life, meaning no more profiteering at the level of exploiting food, land, water, and currencies.
In spirit, yes. Some technical questions, about doing that, but yes,
I'm only referring to commodity trades here. Meaning those who exploit a commodity, not because they're buying the wheat or the water or oil for themselves, but because they can manipulate the price up. That's what this refers to in proper context.
Great, yes.
Okay. Stopping the credit default swap and derivatives that have escalated up to $600 trillion.
Yes.
Stop the Federal Reserve from giving any more no-interest loans to banks and corporations.
Yes.
Declare a moratorium on home foreclosures.
Oh, yes.
Create a national food program to see that the 16 million hungry children in the United States are fed each day.
Of course.
De-ghettoize America by bringing support systems into the ghetto areas and working with people in those, educators, sociologists, psychologists, behavioralists, and community organizers to recreate a functional living standard within ghettos.
Yes.
Create a reforestation program employing the youth in our cities, first those who are unemployed, of all races, to plant trees, hedgerows, and to work on the at least to the level of their skills on our systems, and those who have higher skills to work in bridge repair, levee repair, waterways, gas mains, in infrastructure repair.
Yes.
Forgive all student loan late fees and cap all interest rates. Forgive all late interest payments, cap interest rates on student loans at 1%.
Yes, and we would actually forgive student loans.
Okay, I would too.
And make public higher education free going forward.
Support senior citizens with free community hospital service.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Offer small businesses zero interest loans with no payment for 2 years, providing that for each $1 million up to $5 million earned, the business hires employees at a living wage with health benefits, meaning at $20 an hour or more.
We have a similar proposal on the table, actually, called the Green New Deal. So I'll say yes.
Close and decommission all nuclear facilities in the United States and instead shift that investment into geothermal, solar, wind power, and wave power.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Ban all private funding of all elections. Take corporate money out of all politics 100%.
Yes.
Demilitarize our forces around the world and close all military bases outside the United States.
Yes.
Okay. Cease all gas hydrofracking and offshore drilling.
Oh, yeah.
Audit the Federal Reserve, the Department of Defense, Homeland Security, the CIA, all intelligence agencies, reducing their budgets to what is actually necessary to prevent America from being victimized.
Yes.
Allow all corporations that cannot maintain solvency to go through structured bankruptcy instead of bailout.
Yes.
Begin an independent audit of all bureaucracies in the United States to make them functional at the level needed, but not bloated and unnecessary.
Yeah. You mean all government bureaucracy?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Stop the State Department from forcing Monsanto's genetically engineered foods on other nations that we currently threaten with harm or for resisting them using genetic engineered seeds.
Exactly, and put a moratorium on the use of genetically engineered seeds in the U.S. until we have good science.
Create a Medicare for all health insurance as a form of a single-payer health care.
Yes.
A major movement in America, starting with the Surgeon General and all health agencies, to emphasize disease prevention rather than simply and exclusively treatment.
Oh, yeah.
Free pre-K through college education.
Yes.
All right. Tiered taxes on wealthiest Americans.
Yes.
Charge a modest tax on all Wall Street transactions, including algorithm sales and all corporate offshore operations.
Absolutely.
Defend completely the existing Social Security system.
Oh, yeah.
Look carefully at all of the ways that we are polluting the environment and have citizen input as well as independent scientific environmental input on how we can slow down, stop, or reverse the confrontation with the environment.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Great. It sounds like you've been reading our platform.
No, I haven't. I haven't seen your platform. This is what I've come to believe that we need, and you know, people can agree or disagree. Absolutely, immediately, unequivocally, 100%, not just revoke, but actually have a declaration that the Patriot Act is no longer in existence, null and void, Homeland Security Act, null and void, and anything that interferes in our constitutional rights and protection of our rights as citizens, including reestablishing habeas corpus and the Bill of Rights, is one of the first things to be done.
Yes.
Stop the encroachment of a police state and fascism in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Open up returning environments. They may be professional armed forces tent cities that we erect in other areas of the world, but open them up in every city in the United States so returning vets who are having problems should not go immediately home. They may suffer from alcohol, drug, or post-traumatic stress. They have a chance for a period of time to get psychological, emotional, physical help to help them either with their Gulf War syndrome or their other emotions. So by the time they return to society, they're going into a home less likely to have a problem with suicide or violence.
Sure.
Decriminalize the use of drugs and establish preventative programs of education and help the individuals who need help with drug interdiction.
Great.
Stop the privatizing of all of our major assets and stop the privatization and exploitation of all common grounds, parks, streams, forests, lakes, and shores to those who buy those pieces of property and then exploit them.
Hear, hear, yes.
All right. Acknowledge the dangers of depleted uranium in our conflict zones around the world and go into those areas and tell the truth about what all those shell casings, all those munitions, all those bombs did in Kosovo, in Serbia, in Croatia, in Africa, and in Iraq and Afghanistan, and just tell them the truth. We have created an environmental hazard here, and then put together a Marshall Plan to decontaminate as much as possible the depleted uranium in those areas.
Yes.
All right. Examine carefully the roles of the USDA, the FDA, the National Institutes of Health, the CDC, the National Institutes of Aging, National Institutes of Mental Health, National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and remove the political appointees so that the individuals working there are working on behalf of the public and not the special interest groups.
Yes. I mean, there's a question about how someone's got to head the agencies, but to my mind, that's why money needs to be taken out of politics.
That's the key.
The appointments are paybacks.
All right.
For contribution. Yeah. So I agree. This is a humongous problem, and we'll never have adequate research unless we get the money out.
Give back the excessive powers of the President of the United States. Take them, revoke them, so that the President doesn't become an independent, all-powerful figure that they are today in being able to enact wars illegally, and then hold courts of as South Africa has done, as Argentina has done, as Chile has done, of reconciliation, truth and reconciliation. Those who are willing to come forward who committed crimes, acknowledge those crimes completely, will be exonerated. Those who don't will be prosecuted, and then open up the judicial system to hold anyone accountable for any acts against others that were illegal in the name of America or against Americans. Hold them legally accountable.
Yeah, hard to argue with that. The rule of law.
Challenge the medical community for its over-diagnosing of diseases frequently that do not exist, including social anxiety disorder, and over-drugging our children.
Sure.
Okay, those are the ones I have. Those are just some of those I have. So we at least have an idea of where you're at on those issues. We're out of time for this segment. First of all, kudos to you for having the temerity of spirit and consciousness to step aside from what you saw was not the alignment of your desire to help heal individuals with a medical community that is not as successful at all that it should be because of its rigidity and the high politicalization and commodification of medicine as it is today. And kudos to you also for taking a step into a very unpopular place where you're going to get a lot of body slams, and you'll be disdained by those individuals who say, oh, you're betraying the left, or you're betraying whatever. You're not betraying anybody. You're honoring the people who want a different voice, a third-party voice. And my last comment is, I hope at some point that you sit down with Rocky Anderson, you sit down with Ralph Nader, you sit down with even Ron Paul, disagree vehemently with what you cannot accept, but look at what he has that you could accept and find roads of conciliation to work together for common interests where the public's interest comes first, not an ideological interest first. Those are just my own hopeful list.
Great. Terrific. Well, couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, that's certainly my hope and my intent. And I think at the end of the day, there is a movement for democracy and justice that is being driven by ordinary people out there. And it is unstoppable. And at the end of the day, we know that the Green Party is going to be on the ballot because we already have ballot status, and we are determined to give people a voice in this election and a choice when they go to the polls, so they don't just have to vote for, you know, four more years of business as usual under a Wall Street-sponsored candidate. We will be there to give people a real choice and to stand up and say, we're not going to keep going down with the ship. You could argue the Democrat or Republican might be going down faster. I mean, the lunatic Republicans are definitely taking us over the edge. Do we want to just escape into another ship that's also going down, maybe not quite as fast? I don't think so. We need a lifeboat. We need a clean politics, and that's exactly what you've been talking about. And thank you so much for the chance to be here and to be talking with you today.
Please also reach out to Dennis Kucinich, Bernie Sanders. You do have in Congress a handful, and I must state only a handful of truly conscientious, populist, progressive individuals who care about people first in their interest. And we will certainly be there to shout out that you exist, that the Green Party exists, and the Justice Party exists. There has to be a coalition of positive minds, and I'm glad to see that you're out there. Thank you very much, Dr.
Great.
Jill
Thank
Stein,
so
for being
much.
With us.
Great talking with you, Gary. You take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.